everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Casual Hour, a podcast ostensibly about video games, but mostly about VTubers who are kawaii. I am your host this time. It's me, Chase Kennecke. Because we're doing a deep dive show, and that means I'm in charge. With me are my co-hosts, the gamer who should go, which doesn't make any sense if they don't announce me second, Johnny Amazich.
Hello.
Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Chase.
And the gamer who we've never come up with a title for because he doesn't do this part, Bobby Pease.
Weeb enthusiast, please.
No, that is me. You're maybe
tallest
the
boy in Centralia.
That's true. He is quite a tall boy with a tall boy. That's what I'm seeing right now.
I figured Bobby was going to need a few of these. I don't know what the fuck's happening tonight.
Oh,
I get nervous when you
it'll
steer. I never understood like my mom's fear of me driving and like how she clinched things in the car.
Bobby,
until I yes.
You know who you are on Chase's deep dive nights. You know that scene in What About Bob where Bob is tied to the mast of the sailboat?
Yes.
What about Bobby? God, I wish we could. I wish we had titles for this one.
I'm sailing.
Damn.
I sent Johnny this. Really quick, not to derail, Sarah mm-hmm. has to use an alias for work on her voice support calls, and somehow she was associated with Betty, and I've just been replaying the scene from What About Bob where he's, I know that Betty, I know. New Hampshire? What About Bob? Maybe the most underrated comedy of all time.
It's really good. You know what? I was about to ask who's in it, but we don't have time for that. We have a show to run here.
Bill Murray.
Okay. His name's Bill, though, not Bob. It should be
Billy Murray.
What about Bill?
So, Chase, what about these V electronic tubers?
No, we're not talking about VTubers.
Thank God. Or wait, no, I shouldn't say it. It could be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse, but it's not worse. It'll be fine. I have another episode where we're going to talk about some Nintendo accessories.
Hell yeah, my favorite. Yes, show and tells.
Yeah, show and tell on an audio only podcast. It's gonna go great.
You got that new Nintendo thing, the Game and Tell or the Game and Show or whatever it's called.
The Game and Tell?
I believe the Game and Tell. The Game and Watch. And no, I didn't get that. I still think that is an affront to God to put an NES game on a Game and Watch and try to sell it to us. That is
please, dude. That's not the proper nomenclature. It's Game and Show.
Yeah. You know what? The history of a Game and Watch would be a great episode. I would love to do that sometime, but we're not doing that. Instead, we're going to do an episode on this.
A Super Game Boy.
That's one of my favorite accessories.
It's such a cool accessory, even though it's kind of stupid, and I love it. I love it because it's kind of stupid.
That could be literally how you lead into most Nintendo peripherals here at this point
in time. But I think the other ones are interesting to people, but this one is specifically interesting and nostalgic and has a place in my heart specifically.
Same.
Okay.
Because as you guys know, as the gamer on the go with a different podcast called Gamers on the Go, I'm an unabashed handheld video game fan. So the idea of here is a peripheral, here's an accessory that lets you play handheld games, even though it takes away the handheld part of them, is cool to me. It's interesting to me. I had to have one of these things when they showed up.
Nintendo's been switching for a while.
Yeah, sure. So anyway, we're going to have a show here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of the Super Game Boy and some other devices in that same ballpark. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun here. So you guys know I love the Game Boy. It's probably my favorite system of all time from just a nostalgia standpoint. And the Super Game Boy is it lets you play Game Boy games on a Super Nintendo. It's pretty self-explanatory.
That's it, right?
It's in the name, literally in the name. But like, why would you want to do that?
Why would you want to do that, Chase?
because you might be a person who wants to see more than four colors on your video games when you're at home. You might want to have a video game that plays on the full screen resolution of your television. There are lots of reasons that you might want to play games that are not Game Boy games at home. Makes sense to me. But, you know, despite the kind of curious use cases, the Super Game Boy is often, you know, looked back on fondly by players and is one of the better remembered Nintendo peripheral devices ever made. I mean, you both, contrary to many episodes that we've done like this, you both know what this is. And oh, yeah. It sounds like at least one of you have history with this.
Yep.
So, Johnny, would you like to tell me any stories you might have about the Super Game Boy?
I never owned one myself, but my cousin did.
Okay, Bobby, would you like to tell me any... No, sorry, continue on, Johnny.
And I remember when he explained to me what it was, it blew my mind. Because I was used to playing all my Game Boy games on this teeny little screen that was, you know, green, monochrome. And the thought of popping it into a cartridge that would then go into a Super Nintendo and you play it on the big screen, you know, just blew my little 8-year-old mind. So I remember playing Donkey Kong Land 3, and I think I played some Pokemon on the big television, and I thought it was really cool, but I never owned a Super Nintendo until I was an adult, so I never had one of my own, unfortunately.
Wow. Cool. So we're calling ourselves adults now. Great.
legally.
Bobby, did you ever own one of these?
No, I did not. I was very limited on what Game Boy games I had. However, neighborhood kids, they had one of these. And so just like the neighborhood rounds, seeing it, I do remember at minimum seeing Pokemon played at length on one of these, which was really cool.
Nice. If only I was one of your neighbors, you guys would have had a much more enriching video game experience growing up, I think.
I think 64 is when that really turned around for me. Like, more of the weird shit that goes with it.
Right. N64 had a lot of that weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
As we've covered on the show before, in the cases like the N64 Transfer Pack. So yeah, let's talk about this thing. The story of the Super Game Boy actually goes back to the NES days. Intelligent Systems, makers of fine video games like the Fire Emblem series and the WarioWare franchise and Advance Wars and Paper Mario and all sorts of cool shit.
They've made a lot of shit, haven't they?
They have made a lot of shit. We like them here. They are friends of the show, Intelligent Systems.
Yes.
All
long-time listeners.
They developed a device capable of playing Game Boy games on a Famicom disc system. So again, this is Japan, and specifically through the disc system, and they called it the Wide Boy because it was basically
that's what they call me.
Nice, well done. They called it the Wide Boy, and it was basically this Game Boy that was built on a circuit board, and they would run it through the Famicom to play it on a television. Sounds a lot like a Super Game Boy, because it kind of was. It even had some color options that you could add on to it, but it was never produced commercially, and it was really just used for developers and for media who were trying to take screenshots and things like that. It was a good way for them to see that kind of equipment. Nintendo also made another device. It was a Game Boy demo device. I forgot exactly what it was called. But if you ever saw those big Game Boy kiosks at something like Toys R Us that mm-hmm. looked like a Game Boy and had a screen, those were basically Wide Boys, but they were called like the Nintendo demo experience or something like that, the Game Boy demo experience. And again, those are also not commercially available. But in June of 1994, this was around 3 years after the Super Nintendo launched in North America, Nintendo would release the Super Game Boy. And similar to the Wide Boy, if you open one of these things up, you'll see a circuit board that looks like a Game Boy circuit board, and you'll see a cartridge slot that looks like a Game Boy's cartridge slot. And really the only difference is it has an adapter slot for the Super Nintendo. And
is it more of like a pass-through?
Yeah, it basically is a pass-through. It uses the video of the Super Nintendo. It uses a couple other functions. It's not a perfect pass-through. And that's why you'll find that the Super Game Boy doesn't work on a lot of these other fake Super Nintendo systems, like the analog Super FX. I think it's called Super FX. Super NT? No. Super... I forgot what it's
Super
called.
Super NT.
It might be the Super NT. Doesn't work on there. It doesn't work through Retron 5, although it's pointless because a Retron 5 can play Game Boy games in a different slot. But it doesn't work through those things because it did need a little bit more out of the Super Nintendo than just saying, hey, give me your video. So it works slightly differently. It doesn't work on something like the Retron, and it doesn't work on something like the Retron because that is an emulator. It's dumping files, and you're not dumping stuff from the Super Game Boy. You can dump the Super Game Boy, but it doesn't dump the game in the Super Game Boy. That's why something like that doesn't work. But again, you'd never need to do that. Unless you like cool borders, and we'll talk a lot about cool. Not cool borders, but if you like cool space.
Do I ever borders. Like borders that are cool?
Yes, we will talk about borders that are cool here in a bit. So interestingly, the Super Game Boy, actually, this is one of those things. It runs off the Super Nintendo's clock speed, and it doesn't line up perfectly. And... It leads to Game Boy games actually running 2.4% faster through a Super Game Boy. So, you know, 2.4% doesn't really change anything for people. You aren't really going to notice that. But, you know, if you're a speedrunner and you're planning on speedrunning something like the Jetsons Robot Panic, just to, you know, pull out a random Game Boy game
that I was just thinking
never
about
heard
that.
Of before. So, yeah, if you're thinking of playing that game and you want to speedrun it, 2.4% faster.
Why wouldn't you want to do that?
It sounds like a great Saturday afternoon to me. This accessory would cost you $59.99 at the time, and that's doing the conversion, that's about $105, $105.40 if you want to get super specific in 2020 bucks.
That's the price of a Game Boy.
It's cheaper than a Game Boy because a Game Boy was $90 when it first came out in 1989, so maybe if it came down in price, it would be about that, but...
Was it just the adapter? Did it come with a game as well?
This was just the adapter. It came... Okay. Originally, it was just the Super Game Boy in a box. Later, it would come in a box packed with this. This is the 72-page Super Game Boy guide, the complete guide to the colorful side of Game Boy, official Nintendo seal of quality.
Damn.
So that's the version I had, obviously, if I have this guide. And we'll talk about the guide here in a bit, because the guide, I think, is really cool. And it's something I'm glad I've hung on to for a long time. So a Game Boy would cost you about $90 at the time. And so it was cheaper than that. The Game Boy Pocket would come out in 1996, a couple years later, and that would be $69.99. So again, cheaper than that. It's cheaper than... Thank you. It was cheaper than buying... a new Game Boy. So I suppose there is this use case that if you were a Super Nintendo only player and you wanted to know what some of these Game Boy games are all about, you could buy one of these and those cartridges and never own a Game Boy. I don't know who out there is doing that. I've never heard of that use case.
That would have been a perfect thing for me. I mean, like, honestly, because my family, I've talked about this before and I don't want to like derail, but my parents are like, you've already got a gaming system. You don't need to have one that goes with you. Mm-hmm. And like my family would legit like put a CRT television in the van, hook up my Super Nintendo in the van for road trips. What? And like, that's what I, yeah.
No, I grew up pretty similarly. We had like a little CRT TV with a VHS slot in it, VCR. And we would put that in the van. Like we took out the middle row of seats and then you put that down. And then, of course, because it was the 90s and nobody cared about safety at that point, as long as you were in the back seat, the back end, you know, I'm not wearing a seatbelt or anything. Like I'm laying down with the dog in the middle of the van where the seat got pulled out. And like we got blankets and pillows and stuff. Like we're in a crash, we'd be fine. Probably not. And like I would just watch those things and it had like a little headphone jack in it. I never tried putting a Super Nintendo into that. I don't know if we would have had enough plugs for that, enough adapters to make that happen. But yeah, totally.
That's what we did. So like for me, I, you know, my parents weren't about to spend the money on a on another Game Boy or other games that went with it. So this would have been a really great device for me to pick up to do that. And I ended up getting a Game Boy Color through, you know, trades later on in life. But yeah, I would have been the person you're thinking of right now. This would have been perfect for me.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, you are the edge case because I think most people would have used this as a sort of like prehistoric cross save. It's like, hey, I took my Pokemon cartridge that I was playing at recess at school, and now I'm back home, and now I can pop that cartridge in the Super Game Boy and keep playing and lose to Lieutenant Surge some more because I picked Charmander or whatever. I don't know.
I can't get over like how much they've been chasing this game anywhere for decades now.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk about the legacy and other things that Nintendo has made that kind of try to capture this near the end of the show. But yeah, I think it's super interesting. That's how I used it anyway, was to be able to play some of those games that I had, and I'd get home and okay, now I can play it in color on this thing. So for most gamers, and for most games, the Super Game Boy did exactly as it was advertised. It brought your handheld games to the big screen. And to keep that proper aspect ratio, there were borders. We talked about the borders, the cool borders. There were 9 borders that were pre-installed into the Super Game Boy. Things like it would make your TV look like the rest of a shell of a Game Boy, or like you could see it would say like Super Game Boy, where it would say Game Boy on a Game Boy. I'm saying Game Boy a lot. There was another one that had like these mirrors on each side, and if you kept things paused for a while, I can't remember exactly how long, Mario would come out of one of the mirrors and he would just kind of like, oh hey, I'm Mario, and then he'd disappear again.
It's not disturbing at all.
And there was like a writing desk. There was one where it was like a rural farm ranch kind of area, and it'd be like on a sign and you'd just be playing your video game on a sign. But the coolest one was one that was basically blank. And there was a mode called graffiti mode where you could draw on the border itself. And not only on the border, you could actually draw on the screen if you wanted to, which you're not going to want to do that. Like that sounds dumb. But in the guide, in our complete guide to the colorful side of Game Boy, there would be, they would say, let me actually page to the page here where they talk about it. Covering part of the playfield. You should only do this if you're extremely familiar with the game. Otherwise, you may miss crucial parts of a level and wind up in a no-win situation. To cover part of the playing field, and then it tells you kind of how to do it. So, like, in Tetris, draw a mysterious magician's hand over the top of the screen. Incredibly tricky. Like, there was, yeah. So, you could make the game harder if you wanted to.
Weird.
By just covering up part of the screen. Another one of these screenshots has a big star drawn over the middle of the screen in Super Mario Land. So you just wouldn't necessarily know where Mario was specifically unless you jumped super high or something. Really, really odd. But what is kind of interesting is this other section here that's called Take Notes. Sometimes it's impossible to remember every detail of a game, especially in adventures like The Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening. Try using the graffiti option as your own personal notebook. Simply write notes in the border about what's in the surrounding area. You can scribble down clues or sketch maps to help you wind your way through a dungeon level. Which, one, you wouldn't want to do that. you're using a D-pad to try to draw letters and shit. It was terrible. No one would take the time to do this. But it was compatible with the Super Nintendo mouse, the one that would work, that would come with Mario Paint, and that would allow you to draw a little bit faster or have a little bit more control over making your artistic shit, or if you wanted to draw some garbage to tell you, hey, this town is this way. And it's interesting that they chose the Link's Awakening to tell you about that, because it reminds me a lot of what Nintendo did later with the DS Zelda games, the Phantom Hourglass and the train one. What the fuck was it called? Spirit Tracks.
Spirit Tracks.
Spirit Track.
Yeah. So that game would let you take notes and like keep them on the map, or like had like a separate section where you could just scribble down notes in like a notebook on the bottom screen using the stylus. And I think it's kind of funny that, maybe that has some roots in this. So I found that interesting.
Some grassroots. Sure. Real grassroots upbringing over at Nintendo.
Because you cut grass with the sword, is that what you're going with?
Yeah, that's it. Rupees.
Yeah,
man, there are some really great borders for this thing.
Are you looking at the like the pre-installed ones? Or I'm like ones at that people the made?
VGMuseum.com.
Like, okay.
Which also has the Super Game Boy Advance
ones as there well.
What did you search for, Johnny, to find that?
For the Super Game Boy borders, and it was like the first search result. I also sent you a link.
Yeah, we'll get to the future stuff, but yes, those nine borders were really fun, and they were a cool part of the thing. What is also interesting, and like maybe the bigger selling point of the Super Game Boy, is that you could actually play your games in color. So, if you guys know anything about the Game Boy hardware, the Game Boy can only show four colors. Johnny did mention that it was monochromatic. It would have four shades of, pea green if you were playing on that old screen, on that original Game Boy screen. So when you put it into the Super Nintendo, basically all it did was changed each of those four colors into something more vibrant using the Super Nintendo's hardware. And it had 32 preset palettes in it, so you could switch to any one of those palettes while you're playing a game and maybe get a better experience. In fact, some palettes were made specifically for some games. I know like there's a good one I think they made specifically for the Game Boy game Tennis that makes sure that the green is going to be on the court surface, so it looks like grass. And because they thought ahead when they built the Super Game Boy, some of those palettes would actually automatically show up for some of those games. If you put in a game, it would go, okay, this is the palette that should be in there. For most games, though, it would start you on palette one, and you could go into the menu by pressing L and R together on your Super Nintendo controller, and then you could pick whichever palette you wanted, or you could make a custom palette. And making a custom palette was pretty easy. It would give you a color picker. You pick the colors that you wanted for each of the spots. The general wisdom was that colors on the left, like of the four colors, the furthest left was the lightest color and the furthest right was the darkest color. So you could kind of pick things based on that and kind of have an idea of, okay, this lightest color is probably what a lot of backgrounds are going to be. This darker color is going to be maybe what platforms are. So you could kind of figure out where things would go like that. And you could also just have fun making fun custom palettes. And you could even share those with friends because it would have a password system to it. Like basically a friend code. but you could write down that code. It was relatively long. You could share that. Yeah, I know. Actually, it's again,
so weird.
The Super Game Boy Complete Guide to the Colorful Side of Game Boy guide here actually has a few examples slash like, oh, here's a code. There's nothing like a day at the beach. With this color combo, you'll really feel like you're there for Wario Land. And that code is 0691-3520-1243.
It is code.
Yeah, basically a friend code right there. Again, kind of a cool thing that you could change colors. You could change colors at any time. So you could even change colors between levels. If you were playing Super Mario Land and you got into the water level stuff, then maybe you can go, oh, well, let me pause it and change the palette to make the water
look. Oh, God.
You could be like that if you wanted to be. And, you know, that was a fun thing to do. But some games, like Super Mario Land specifically, would have a custom palette that was built into the Super Game Boy. They picked the colors that they thought worked best, and it would automatically show those. And it would automatically, for a game like that, have a border that was hidden in the Super Game Boy code. Like, you couldn't access that border normally, but you could access that border if it detected that Super Mario Land was in the cartridge slot, and you could get a custom border for that game. So a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, a number of games had code built into the Super Game Boy so that they could work, they could pull up that custom border if you ever played that in a Super Game Boy, because those games were made before Super Game Boy was a thing. They didn't know to program those things into the games themselves. So these are games like, again, Super Mario Land, one of the first games that came out with the system, Tetris, one of the first games that came out with the system. Those kinds of games got custom borders built into the Super Game Boy. Games that came out after the Super Game Boy, they would program that data to happen when the cartridge got plugged in. So that data was then put on those cartridges and then passed through the Super Game Boy. And those would be things like Pokemon, which came out years after.
Yeah.
Which had a really lame border. Oh, both of those borders were so bad. It's like, yes, one was red and one was blue, but it looked like there were just like four cards of Pokemon in each of the corners. And I remember red had Kangaskhan. It might actually have been the same Pokemon, just with a blue and a red color. I can't remember. Those were so fucking lame. They were so lame.
They could have done a lot more with that.
They really could have, especially for a game that was so popular. But also, that game, we know, had some real storage issues with it. And especially Gold and Silver that came next had some storage issues as well that they had to work out.
Iwata-san had to come in and save their asses.
That's true. Yeah. In fact, he saved their asses so hard they were able to put all of Kanto in there. It's a cool story.
Kanto!
Iwata's great. Man, if only Iwata was around to fix all the shit in Sword and Shield so we could add another region in that game.
What region would you want?
I mean, probably Kanto again.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, actually, you know what? I would probably want Johto. We have Kanto in the Let's Go games, so I wouldn't mind seeing Johto again. That'd be fun. Anyway. Also in the guide, if we're still talking about color palettes, again, let me pull up one of these things because it's so stupid. They're like, hey, do you want an extra little challenge? Because if you do, here we go. Here's an even stranger idea. If you can beat Dr. Mario after selecting this color combination, consider yourself a master. And the colors are black, 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 and white. So you literally do not know the colors of the pills and the colors of the viruses. So it's specifically stupid. It's so stupid. God. It's just like a white outline around some of this shit. It's like, oh, it'd be such a challenge. What if you changed a couple colors to the same color, and now you have no idea if those platforms are there? They look invisible.
Doesn't sound like a challenge. It sounds fucking broken.
Yeah, it sounds fucking broken. I never did that. I don't know
a lot of copy to fill in these things.
Yeah, true. 72 pages. You gotta fill them with something. I think that's hilarious, though, that they would suggest something like that. Of like, oh, you could make the game harder by just making the colors bad. Wouldn't that be great? There were some other features that were in some of these games. Games like The King of Fighters 95 and Killer Instinct, these are the Game Boy versions, obviously, of these games, included single cartridge two-player modes. So when you played them in the Super Game Boy, you could actually just plug in a second Super Nintendo controller and just play them
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
Why you would want to do that when you could just play Street Fighter on your Super Nintendo? No idea. Mm. There were a couple other games, too. I believe it's Wario Blast, which is basically just Bomberman with a Wario skin over it. That game could actually use the Super Nintendo multi-tap, and you can play four players on one Game Boy cartridge, which is hilarious. But also, Bomberman is just on the Super Nintendo. There's a Bomberman game on the Super Nintendo, if not 12. So
why, just play that.
Why would you need that? But it is funny. And then some games, like Kirby's Dream Land 2 and Contra the Alien Wars, even receive some expanded sound capabilities for the Super Game Boy. So you plugged it in, and you got a couple new sound channels that it would use with the Super Nintendo. And that's pretty cool. It's nice that people would find ways of using this technology to bring you a better experience when you could. I think that's really neat. But maybe one of the coolest things is that developers could also overlay additional custom colors on top of those four color palettes. The only issue with that is that those colors would have to be static on screen. I don't want to get too much into the technical stuff, but basically
right.
It could break. As a developer, you could say, I want to break the screen up into different pieces, and then each of those pieces can have their own four color palettes to them. And we can make that custom, except if anything was moving on those palettes at the time, they might look stupid if they crossed over from one section of the screen to another that had different palettes. You would see really limited use for something like this. Most developers would have like a cool title screen that wouldn't move, or like parts of it would move, but only in specific parts of the screen. So it could show like a bunch of colors, but when you got to the actual game, when you had to move around a character and do stuff, it wasn't gonna have those custom palettes on those things. The game that took the most advantage of this was Donkey Kong 94, which was actually developed around the same time as the Super Game Boy, and it was really kind of that killer app that came out around it. It wasn't packed in, but it was like, hey, this is the game you need if you have a Super Game Boy. Because they really went all out. And this is Nintendo EAD who made this game. And there are overlays everywhere. The title screen looks like a Donkey Kong arcade cabinet. The border has like Donkey Kong arcade cabinet stuff on it, like the side screens and things like that. It's got a bunch of custom overlays. And even when you get into the level selects, those have custom palettes overlaid on top of those. And it's just a really gorgeous looking game. It had extra sound. So whenever you got to the top of the screen and Donkey Kong took Pauline and carried her away, you would actually hear Pauline speak or scream rather, help me, as she would leave the screen. And that wouldn't be a sound that you would get on the Game Boy version, only when you got the expanded sound by putting it in the Super Game Boy. And that game is fucking rad. That game is so good. If you guys haven't played it, it is. It starts out like the arcade game. You'll play those same four levels that the Game Boy that the arcade version has, and then it just keeps going, and it goes so far away from what the arcade game was. It becomes kind of a puzzle game, where it's so good. It's so good. I did a very old Gamers on the Go episode about it. Old now, with friend of the show Zach Fleeman, friend of this show, of course. Zach Fleeman. Zach. Yes, everyone loves Zach Fleeman.
Yeah, Zach's great.
He and I did a show on Donkey Kong 94, and I believe we talked a little bit about the Super Game Boy when we did that episode. But yeah, that game is great. People should play that game. It is so cool. That's a lot about what the Super Game Boy could do, but there are also a lot of things that it couldn't do. Couldn't play Game Boy Color only games. Game Boy Color wouldn't come out for, you know, another handful of years. I think the Game Boy Color was 98, so that's 4 years later. They didn't know about that, so they didn't know to program Game Boy Color support. When I'm talking about Game Boy Color only games, those are the translucent packaged ones that kind of had that little bubble on them. These are games like the Zelda Oracle games or Kirby's Tilt and Tumble, which... That game would have been a disaster on a Super Game Boy. You'd have to like pick up the Super Nintendo and roll it around. That'd actually be hilarious. Somebody should do that.
I'm sure someone has.
But I'm talking about like those black case games, like Link's Awakening DX was one of those. Like, hey, it's a Game Boy game, but it has Game Boy Color data in it. So if you put it into a Game Boy Color, it would show that extra color data. But for the most part, like Pokemon Gold and Silver, like, those aren't black cases, but those were the same things. Those had colors, had color information specifically made if you put them in the Game Boy Color, but they could also run on an original Game Boy, and thus they could also run on a Super Game Boy. It also didn't have a Link cable port. So if you were one of those people who played a lot of Pokemon, fuck you. You can't trade them. You can't trade them shit on your Super Game Boy. Nintendo first said like this would screw up something with the RF signal, and it sounded like bullshit at the time. It probably was bullshit. But hey, you know.
Is the official casual hour stance that it's bullshit?
Yes, I believe okay. That is the official stance. So to fix that, because I think Nintendo realized it was bullshit too, in 1998, Nintendo released the Super Game Boy 2. Did you guys ever have a Super Game Boy 2?
No.
No.
Did you even know there was a Super Game Boy 2?
Yes. Did not.
Okay. This is a Super Game Boy 2. I have.
Oh, shit. Wow.
It's also, I think, sealed. I think this is a sealed box. I don't think this is repackaged. I think this is an actual sealed box. What do we get for that? Probably not a ton. It's definitely rarer than a Super Game Boy. A Super Game Boy these days might run you like $10 if you got it on like Amazon or eBay or something like that. A Super Game Boy 2, we'll talk about that. Let's talk about that right now. So the thing that the Super Game Boy 2 added, other than a cool blue translucent packaging, like shell here, it looks really rad. It added the Link cable. So Nintendo's like, yeah, we know the Link cable, probably you probably want that. It also came with 8 new borders that replaced the old borders, although you could access those old borders with codes, I believe. And it also fixed the clock speed issue. So, you know, sorry, speedrunners, you want to go back to the old Super Game Boy if you want that speed. Super Game Boy 2 ain't going to give it to you. Unfortunately, it still could not play Game Boy Color games. So still shit out of luck there. And also you're double shit out of luck because it never came to the States. This was Japan only. I had to import my copy, and that's probably what makes it a little bit more expensive. I don't think they made as many Super Game Boy 2s as they did original Super Game Boys. But also they probably made a ton of each. It's just, you know, when you add on shipping, you got to find them online. It makes it a little bit more expensive. Not super tough. I think mine costs like $30-$35, something like that, without the shipping. So they're not terrible. So the Game Boy is a region-free device. If you have a Japanese Game Boy game, like I have a Japanese copy of Pokemon Green, the version we didn't get here. And that works perfectly fine on my US Game Boy. Game Boy's region free. The Super Game Boy, also region free. Same reasoning. So you can play any Japanese game on your Super Nintendo, any Japanese Game Boy game on your Super Game Boy through your Super Nintendo, no problem at all. The Super Famicom and the Super Nintendo are kind of region locked.
I thought they were.
They're technically region locked in that there are two little tabs on your Super Nintendo that are in the cartridge slot on either side, and those stop your Super Famicom games from fitting into that cartridge slot because they're completely smooth on the back. On the Super Game Boy, maybe you can even see on here there's two like little notches on either side. Those notches, that's like their way of having the region locking. You can take some pliers and just ply those little pieces out. You probably should. It's not going to hurt your system at all unless you've like really jammed something into the cartridge slot. If you're a little bit careful, you can totally snip those those little tabs off, and you can play Super Famicom games on your Super Nintendo and also your Super Game Boy 2. I mean, it's not worth it. I'm not saying you should do that. You could. I wouldn't do it for the Super Game Boy 2. I'd do it for something like Final Fantasy V or something cool. But yeah, Super Game Boy 2. It's you shouldn't import something that basically does everything a Super Game Boy can do, except it has a link cable. Like, don't do that. that'd be dumb. Speaking of things that are dumb, reviewers were kind of mixed on the Super Game Boy when it came out. Many reviewers just found it pretty redundant that, hey, the Game Boy came out in 1989. Why are we playing these slightly better versions of five-year-old games? Fast forward to 2020, and we're like, oh, sweet, a slightly better version of this five-year-old game. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I mean, maybe things have changed.
I thought it was cool back then, too. Absolutely. I actually own two Super Game Boys and a Super Game Boy 2. It's very confusing.
Two Super Game Boys and a game... Okay, I just... Yeah. Hang on, I'm hip.
I own three Super Game Boys, but there is no Super Game Boy 3.
Hmm.
You still with me?
I think so. Yeah, I'm good. Okay. I'm good.
I think it's kind of hilarious how much we're super excited, myself included, for like, hey, this game's barely old at all. Who wants to play Demon Souls again? And I mean, that game's
everybody apparently.
Yeah. That game's more than 5 years old, but still, the point stands. So despite mixed reviews, it actually sold relatively well. So they are pretty abundant and cheap. Like I said, you can probably go out and grab a Super Game Boy for like $10 if you wanted to. It's really not hard. And the Super Game Boy 2, you just need to import it. Again, not super expensive. So after the Super Game Boy, there were other accessories that would be made for future systems. And they would kind of have some mixed success. Nintendo actually made and sold a Super Game Boy-like device for the Nintendo 64. It was called the Wide Boy 64, to go back to the original one. This one, the original Wide Boy, also not sold commercially. It would be sold to developers and to media outlets. And it was extremely expensive. It was like $1,400. Which is a lot.
Hey, you want to live that thick boy life, you got to have that thick boy cash.
I guess. It was like, hey, there are actually two versions of the Wide Boy 64. One could play Game Boy and Game Boy Color games. So, hey, something that could finally play Game Boy Color games. And then there would be another edition that would come out a little bit later that could also play Game Boy Advance games. So, but again, the Super Game Boy was... $59.99 when it came out, and then they're like, hey, this does basically the same shit except it works on Nintendo 64. $1,400, please.
I see nothing wrong with this logic.
They weren't selling it commercially, I'm sure. I mean, if you've ever seen an image of the Wide Boy 64, it was definitely not ready for prime time. It's got like shit coming out of it, like circuit board shit. So like, it's not. It was not made to be a commercial product, and that's probably why it costs a lot more. But still think that's kind of interesting.
It looks so bootleg.
Oh, yeah. It is definitely super bootleg. And that's what a lot of those like debug units and other things that media and developers would use for screenshots and for making their games. You know, sometimes you need to use that, some of that rickety shit to make it work. Other companies would try making some knockoff shit. There was a device called the GB Hunter for the Nintendo 64 that was just garbage. I believe that did Game Boy and maybe even Game Boy Color games. Don't even bother with something like that. I never owned one. I've heard they're all garbage.
This thing looks like a nightmare.
Oh, totally. It looks like somebody flushed a Game Genie down the toilet, and then it's like, hey, here it is. You know, it just looks like some garbage black plastic. It's terrible. Nintendo would come back and try this idea again commercially with the Game Boy Player. And that came with the Nintendo GameCube, or came for the Nintendo GameCube. This device, it would hook onto the bottom of a GameCube, and it also required the Game Boy Player boot disc that would come with it to be in the disc slot, or in the disc tray, I guess, for a GameCube. It was more a tray than a slot. And so you'd have to have those things to be able to run the console, but it would allow your GameCube to play Game Boy or Game Boy Color or even Game Boy Advance titles. Unfortunately, Nintendo stopped being fun at that point. They're like, hey, we put a handle on the console. What more do you want? So this one didn't come with cool borders. And it also wouldn't even come, like if you put in Pokemon, it wouldn't even show the border from the Super Game Boy version. And that's sad.
Do you believe that the Xbox Series X is just two GameCube stacked up together with a black case on it?
Have you seen the photos? Because the dimensions are perfect.
I know.
It's amazing. I would love to see
so badly.
I would love to see a Game Boy play a GameCube with a Game Boy Player stacked on top of a Series X.
That'd be the ultimate gaming machine.
Chase, what if I got you a spice orange Xbox Series X with a handle?
So I'd have to look. I think I do have a Spice GameCube that was imported. They didn't sell Spice GameCubes in the States. I definitely have a Spice controller that was sold in the States. There is, I believe, I'm pretty sure there is a Spice Game Boy Player.
There is. I'm looking at it right now.
Yes. Which I do not own, which, you know, Christmas is coming, guys.
You can be the proud owner of one for only $82.43 on Amazon.
That sounds like $41 each for you guys if you really want to pitch in and get me something cool for Christmas.
Look at that. Look at that orange beefy boy.
It's so good. God, I love spice. I love spice. I don't like pumpkin spice, but I like spice.
Damn, this one's $180 with $20 shipping.
Probably worth it. Probably worth it. What is interesting that a handful of Game Boy Advance games actually would program in some rumble features. So if you were playing your Game Boy Advance game on a Game Boy Player, it might have some rumble on your GameCube controller. And I think that's cool. That's a cool thing. Not as cool as Borders, but, you know, it's a thing. It's a thing you can do. There are a number of third-party devices that also have tried to connect Game Boys to TVs. We did talk about the Game Boy Hunter or the GB Hunter. We talked about the Retron 5 earlier. I think the Retron 5 is fine. Like, again, it's trying to dump those cartridges and emulate them instead of playing the cartridge itself. I mostly bought my Retron 5 to try to get screenshots for my Game Boy games to maybe use for gamers on the go, and I just didn't find that process to be very fun at all or very useful, so I didn't do it. However, Johnny and I are getting a true successor to the Super Game Boy next year in the Analog Pocket, which will allow us to play our Game Boy.
Is that still happening?
It is.
It so definitely far. Exists.
Allows us to play our Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, even Game Gear and TurboGrafx if you have the correct adapters, to be played in both a handheld mode and also on a TV through HDMI. So, you know, that's actually a lot more than a Super Game Boy, but it carries the spirit of the Super Game Boy with it, and I applaud it for that. You know, Bobby mentioned that Nintendo has had this kind of thought in their head for these games that you could switch up how you play them, one might say. You know, we have the Nintendo Switch. We have this idea of, hey, I can play a game on the go and then come home and I can put it in the dock and I can play it on my TV. Or these days with a pandemic, you just keep it in the dock because you ain't going nowhere.
You dock it.
Stay in your fucking homes.
Yeah.
We're all docked right now. No change in that. But yeah, like that as a two-way gaming system has like some of that Super Game Boy feel to it. And especially when we have some companies who are releasing actual Game Boy titles for the system, like in the Collection of Mana or the upcoming Collection of Saga, those have original Game Boy games in them. And that's really cool. I wish Nintendo would make a Nintendo Switch Online for Game Boy games. That'd be great. They should do that, which means they probably won't. But they should. And then, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention the PlayStation TV, or in Japan, known as the PlayStation Vita TV. The Vita lives, still lives. Doesn't live, it's pretty dead. But I loved this beautiful little micro console. Remember when we were saying life. The term micro console with Ouyas and
yeah,
other garbage that nobody ever played? Man.
Apple's, I think Apple's still trying to do that with the Apple TV. Really do.
Yeah. I guess that's a micro console in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that they're the and then
it's probably the most successful one when you consider that
sure.
You know, something like Apple Arcade actually is going to have some momentum behind it, unlike something like Stadia that feels like it's been left to die.
Hey, we're about to have a 1-year birthday party for that little baby. You should just wait and say happy birthday to that thing here this week. I think it's this week.
To the Stadia? Is that why it's still shitting itself? Because it's less than 1 year old?
Yeah. That's exactly why. I think it's this week or was last week. It's really close to now.
God, that's so sad. That's, God. I would love to go back to some podcasts that we recorded a year ago and hear you guys talk about how cool you think this can be and me going, I don't know.
Yesterday I just got access to Amazon service.
Oh yeah, the Luna stuff.
The Luna, and I got the controller should be here tomorrow for that. And
you decided you wanted to try this again?
I'm curious, honestly, in comparison to Stadia, if they will come out of the gates with a better offering a year later than what Stadia did, and now that xCloud's out.
I mean, Amazon actually has some developers in their ranks, unlike Google.
And there's a smart though. I mean, like if you sign up for it right now, like what I did, it's a 7-day free trial, and then at the end of that 7 days, it's $5 a month for Netflix style gaming. So it's like not like Stadia where you had to buy each individual game. You just sign up for this service. And you can play it however you want to. We'll talk more about it next week when we're actually doing what you've been playing.
Yeah, back to the more important stuff, which is the PlayStation Vita TV. This was, for the longest time, the only way to play Persona 4 Golden on a television. Of course, now
It's
on Steam, and you could use your Steam links or your big picture mode or whatever the fuck they're calling it these days to be able to play your PC games on your TV. Just an HDMI cable at one point. But yeah, like that was so cool. I remember on the Vita TV having, it was just called the PlayStation TV here, but like I just want to keep saying the word Vita. You guys know how it is.
It's the PlayStation Vita Reality now. That's what it is.
Yeah, sure. That's
PS Vita R.
I said it once before, but Vita does mean life.
So. It does. It does. It can never die.
What is dead may never die.
Yeah, thank you. All right, so ultimately this is a pretty niche issue to be able to play your handheld games on a big screen, especially when we're in a world filled with 4K graphics and HDR and half-step consoles and people just want to push the resolutions as high as they can be.
Hey, but you're talking about old stuff now, Chase. Those half-step consoles are old news.
Sure, yes. I'm sorry. Those last-gen consoles. Yes, for sure.
Thank you.
So we're all worried about how nice graphics can look these days. But I'm glad there's some people out there who still, a lot of people, it's a relatively sizable niche. And it's one of those niches that I'm glad doesn't seem like it's going away. When you have some companies out there like Analog who are saying, you know, we think there's a market here, there are people to be served here. you have people like the Playdate people who are saying, you know, handheld games aren't, like, we think handheld gaming can be cool and people want these things, and it sounds like people do want those things if you hear about how many people have tried their best to get on a list somewhere to pre-order one of those things. Anyway.
Are you trying? Are you trying?
I'm trying. Yeah, absolutely. I'm on the mailing list. They just haven't put it up yet. Set it soon. I'll get one. Anyway, that's about it. That's the show. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks, to Chase. Me rattle on about the Super Game Boy. I think this thing is super cool, and
yeah,
I don't have a Super Nintendo hooked up anywhere. But maybe I'll hook one up just so I can.
I'm thinking a good quarantine winter project for me is I have Sarah's original Super Nintendo, and it's shown its age physically.
Ooh, is it yellow? Has it yellow? It is. With a nice patina.
And I think I'm going to take that apart and try and restore it.
That'd be fun. That would be a fun project.
There are a lot of good video tutorials out there about how to de-yellow a Super Nintendo. Yeah. And yeah,
I think that would be a really good time. So I might try and do that this year into next year.
That's cool. All
Chase, right. You always bring the coolest shit to these.
Yeah, I mean, this one, I'll admit, was a bit of a last-minute thing. We had a different topic scheduled for this deep dive that we kind of tossed off to the side because we weren't super excited about it. And so, you know, I didn't pick out something super obscure. Promise to do that next time. Next time I do one of these, I'll definitely, you know, bring out something that you've never seen before.
Bring out the weird.
But this was a nice one to just go back to something that I really like, and I'm glad I could share it with you guys and tell you a little bit more about it because it's a cool story.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate that, Chase. So guys, look, we're in the thick of a few things. It's the 18th of November. We're wrapping up a deep dive. Next week, we're going to eat some turkey and tell you a little bit about the games that we've been playing. And then we're going to probably just bury our heads and get after some pretty heavy Game of the Year stuff. We'll do one more preview episode for December to wrap up 2020. And then after that,
we'll finally get to figure out the rest of the games that are coming out this year.
Yeah, maybe. We're still holding our breath on one of them.
Nobody knows any of the games that are coming out in December. So
only we do.
Finally figure it out.
Only we do. But Chase, no, seriously, thank you for this. Deep dives are always a ton of fun, and I know that we pulled an audible before this tonight, and you came through strong. If you have any fond memories with one of those devices, we have some ways for you to chat with us about it. But before we get into that, Chase, you did mention Gamers on the Go earlier, which is a very fun, very good podcast, unlike this one. You do talk about handheld gaming, but you made some comments earlier in the episode around, like, hey, we're not going anywhere. You also talked a lot about, in a prior episode, just like, hey, what is a handheld console these days? Like, what does that even look like? So outside of busting off your knowledge here, your encyclopedia knowledge, what do you got going on with Gamers on the Go?
I have news. I do have news, actually. I have scheduled the Game of the Year episode for Gamers on the Go.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be happening actually late next week. You know, it'll be before the end of the year for sure, but friend of the show, Matt Jaguar, is coming back on, as he has, I believe, for every single one of those Game of the Year episodes for GOTG. And we kind of looked down the December list. I did actually see what games are coming out.
I mean, we all know what it is. You can talk about it.
Yeah. I would say that I don't think there's a lot coming out on the Switch in December that I'm super excited about. At least not anything big. Like, maybe.
Can you play baseball on your phone?
You can play baseball on a phone.
So does that make it a Game of the Year, Gamer on the Go?
Who's to say? Who's to say? I'm to say, and I'm to say yes.
I hate this.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. But yes, so look forward to that. I know Matt and I both kind of feel similarly. Like you mentioned, it's hard to say what a handheld video game is these days.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Gamers on the Go is going anywhere. There's still plenty of older games to look at and talk about. There are plenty of games that would come to, you know, something like Apple Arcade or the Switch that, you know, might be a more of a case-by-case basis of what we think counts. We're gonna talk. It's gonna be a little bit of a different Game of the Year episode than previous ones, because things aren't as cut and dried. We might be a little looser on what we consider a handheld game for these purposes, and it might just be more of a fun discussion, you know, a fun discussion about all the fun things that happened this year, the year of 2020, the year of fun.
It's been
what a fun year it's been.
Funnest year on record.
I can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. It should go up, if I have my way, it should go up in early December.
So. Great.
Looking forward to that.
We will definitely share that with all of our social links here. Johnny, outside of teaching your son, are you playing anything with your son?
You know, just the usual Minecraft. We played that meme board game. What's it called? I don't remember.
What do you meme or something like that?
What do you meme? Family Edition.
Yeah.
Do you have more or less enjoyment of Minecraft, because you and I were really into it a couple years back?
It did sometimes less, but I will still play with him.
I imagine it's still a really cool thing to watch him learn and build stuff and want to show you things, and that part's probably cool.
Prattle off any little old thing you want to know about Minecraft, and
but like I couldn't hit you up 10:31, I'd be like, hey, Johnny, let's play some Minecraft. Like, those days are gone.
You could, and I would probably do that with you. But
Johnny would say, ah, sorry, I'm already not playing Xenoblade Chronicles and Ni No Kuni tonight.
Yeah.
Can't help you there.
Oh, that's fair.
So has the Spelunky train completely left the station at this point?
We've cooled on Spelunky a bit, but I mean, we were playing it every day there for
weeks. How far did you guys get?
We never made it past Olmec.
Olmec.
It's just, you know.
Okay.
Spelunky's not as good as Roblox. I think that we've discovered that now, and we know where this is, and talk about near perfect video games. Hey, I mean, and there's Roblox.
Lil Nas X concert in Roblox a few days ago.
I did not.
Damn.
I did not.
The Jude. I bet Jude loved it, didn't he?
No, he didn't know it existed.
I know we're ending the show. I know we're not doing news, and maybe we'll cover this next week when we do news. But you guys see those Game Award nominees that came out today?
God damn it.
I haven't looked at all of them.
It's not great.
I mean, there are two extremely good games for Game of the Year that are there, and I'm happy about those. And then a bunch of boring shit. I would say there are a couple really cool things in there. 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim got a nod for a category, the wrong category. It was in narrative instead of like best visual art direction or whatever, which it absolutely deserves. And they added one new category that was like best accessibility, or the best accessibility innovation. Unfortunately, when you're going through the site and you're picking stuff, they don't show you anything. Like, tell me what the innovations were. Like, show me why I should care, instead of just giving me a list of games and covers to pick from. So it had Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I'm over here going, what did it do? What's the accessibility option here? And I don't know what it is. And
I just refuse to be okay with a list that puts Doom Eternal as a Game of the Year contender over Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
That was pretty funny. I did appreciate, though, that Animal Crossing New Horizons and Doom Eternal were right next to each other. Mm-hmm. So those fandoms can continue to be the best of friends. That was fun. But yes, Doom Eternal does not deserve to be on that list.
No.
Yeah, it deserves to be on that list about as much as The Last of Us 2. Am I right? Ayo!
Yeah. Chase has got a knack for just shitting on things he doesn't play.
I love shitting on things I don't play.
Oh,
I don't
but play I watch them YouTube videos.
I don't play them because they are shitty. I'm such a fucking informed
video game player. Like, I watch YouTube and VTube, and I'm so informed on what fucking games are. Get the fuck out of here.
There's some VTubers.
Get the fuck off my show.
There's a VTuber playing Doom Eternal, and you can go watch it. I have not seen it. I don't actually.
I'll play the same fucking rinky-dink Animal Cross every day of the year, but I can't fucking go in and even attempt, as a PlayStation fanboy, you won't even play a PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah, the biggest news that came out this week is that you can sit in Animal Crossing starting in 3 hours and 10 minutes.
Look out, guys.
I'm so excited. They fucking did it, everybody.
Animal Crossing did it.
It's going to be great.
Wow. That sounds so innovative.
I'm going to take so many photos of me sitting down. It's going to be great.
If you want to talk to us about what you think of the wide boys on this show, you can absolutely email us. We are thecasualhour@gmail.com. You can also find us on all social at The Casual Hour, and of course on Anchor, where we're hosted, anchor.fm/thecasualhour. Hit us up. We will be back next week with what you've been playing. Chase, thanks again. Actually play a video game instead of watching it next time. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Chase.